for the first time in a midterm election. And this is USA Radio News.
Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies in a capsule. Thousands of doctors, health specialists, and professionals recommend Balance of Nature as a way of improving their health. Listen to a few unsolicited success stories from doctors that not only recommend it, but use Balance of Nature as well.
I look at Balance of Nature and I look what it's doing for me as I've started taking it, and for the patients that I have that are taking it, it's been phenomenal watching the changes that have happened and how much healthier and how much more energy that they have. I haven't heard any negative feedback from any of my patients who have been taking the product. The thing that amazes me with it is that it's so simple.
When you call, use discount code USA, and we'll take 35% off your first month's order and ship it to you free. Call 800-246-8751. That's 1-800-246-8751. Or go online to balanceofnature.com and use discount code USA.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterton Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home Sweet Home.
Good morning, this is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help, and I'm going to start with the weather. Today is sunny and beautiful, high of 60, partly cloudy and low of 37 tonight. Tomorrow, another sunny, beautiful day, high of 53, followed by low of 37 Thursday night. Looks like some rain on Friday, chance of rain, high of 52, going down to 40 Friday night, and then chance of showers again on Saturday, high of 47. And looks like for Veterans Day on Sunday, it's a sunny day, high of 45.
On Thursday, November 8th, from 2 till 7 p.m., the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce will be holding its 30th Annual Business Expo and Food Showcase, presented by PNC Bank. It will be held at Next Level Arena in Flemington, featuring over 100 exhibitors, demos, a chance to enter the cash machine, door prizes, and food tastings from local restaurants. From 4 till 6, meet Bill Spadia from New Jersey 101.5. Admission is free. For details, call the Chamber at 908-782-7115 or visit hunterdonchamber.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith, and you're listening to Happy to Help, a show about volunteering, foundations, donations, how you can volunteer your time, talent, and treasure to help others. And today we are very excited to welcome Cornell Thomas. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, Nicole.
Great. And we're having technical difficulty with our Facebook Live at the studio here. But if you want to watch us live on Facebook, you can go to Cornell's Facebook page, which is Cornell Thomas?
Just Cornell Thomas. Nothing crazy fancy.
Okay, great. And tell us about you've written a book called The Power of Positivity. You've had the Positivity Summit. You've done all kinds of great things. And I just kind of give us a little bit about your background and where all this positivity came from.
Sure. So The Power of Positivity was my first book. And I've written three so far. I'm working on my fourth book right now.
Wow.
which is great. But everything that I am right now is because of my mom. So whenever I travel and I speak, I talk about my mom about 95% of the time, which she always says, don't talk about me, because she thinks what she did was normal. But I was raised by my mom since I was 3 years old. My father passed when I was three. He passed away from cancer. He's a police officer, City of Passaic, New Jersey. Did like amazing things in City of Passaic, New Jersey. But when he passed away, he left my mom with the task of raising five kids on her own. And one of my brothers, my brother Craig, is autistic. So if you know anybody on the spectrum, you know, so that when I tell my mom, like, what you did was not normal, not even close to normal.
Yeah.
Her only purpose in life was to make sure that we were raised the right way. So I remember probably the earliest thing that I remember my mom teaching me was everything happens for a reason. And when you're a young man, when you're 5 years old, 6 years old, you're a kid, you don't know what the reason is that you might struggle or the reason that you don't have a father or any of that stuff. And it's not till later on that it presents itself. So when I go out and speak, I tell people, when you think about everything happens for a reason, people are like, well, why don't I know why it happened right now? Because when adversity hits, we're like, why me? Why is it happening? Mm-hmm. So as I got older in life, I realized that all the struggle that we went through in terms of financially, all the struggle we went through for me personally in terms of not having being able to look into the stands and see my father or have conversations with him, it was just to make me, one, a better father, because there's nowhere I want to be than with my kids all the time. And two, all the adversity that you go through is a chapter in the book, right? It's not the story. If you make it the story, which we tend to do as humans, then it stays with you and you can't get out of the past, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're always looking at that rearview mirror. But if you make it, look at it as a chapter, like eventually I'm going to turn this chapter and get to the next one, then it's easier to get through. So growing up, I didn't really want to be anything. I didn't want to be a superhero or firefighter or police officer. I really didn't know my father, so I didn't have that connection with the law enforcement. And my mom worked 3 jobs since I can remember.
Oh, my goodness.
So I didn't want to be any of those jobs because every time she came home, she looked tired.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't want to do that. Whatever you're doing, I don't want to do. And it wasn't until I was 16 years old where I discovered basketball. It was the first time that I actually fell in love with something. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. I say love because it's the same thing. Like when you fall in love with someone, right, that's all you think about is that person. When I fell in love with basketball, when I first discovered basketball, I never played the game before. And I played freshman football, which I wasn't great at. And I played a little bit of baseball, which I wasn't, you know, I was okay at. But I dropped everything when I found basketball.
Nice.
You know, and I found it because my mom is from Burton, that's Virginia, which is a really small town in Virginia. You'll never be able to find it on the map. Mm-hmm. It's like 4 feet. And my cousin, Carlos, who's 4 years older than I am, 3 years older than I am, he played basketball. He's like this big basketball player in town. So I was sitting on his bed one day, and I looked under his bed. He had all these newspaper articles. And I saw a picture of him in the front page shooting a basketball. And it had his name and, you know, Carlos Taylor scores whatever, how many points. So I was like, wow, this dude is like famous. I was like, I want to be famous, like my cousin.
That's cute.
So that's when I started trying to play basketball. And it also helped that, you know, he had like 50 senior pictures of the hottest girls I've ever seen in my life on his wall.
It's all about the chicks.
So I was like, man, I was like, I'll be able to get a date. I'll be famous. This is my new thing. And so I decided when we were driving home, it was a 5.5 hour driver back to New Jersey. We were driving home. My whole mindset was, okay, I'm going to play professional basketball. This is what I want to do. And so when I got home, I found this little Pizza Hut basketball. It was buried in our basement because no one in my family played basketball. I walked 3 miles to the nearest court.
Wow.
Because we moved from Passaic, New Jersey, which was inner city, to Rockaway, New Jersey, which was not inner city, and there's no sidewalks. Yeah. And so I walked 3 miles, and I got to this place called the A-Field, and I looked at the hoop, and I said, okay, well, here it is. You know, all the things that I want to happen is going to happen. And I threw the ball up, Nicole, and the ball went over the basket and, like, rolled down the hill. And I was just sitting there in shock and horror, really. And I was like, wait a second. This is supposed to be easy. Like, I was supposed to be able to play basketball.
Yeah, that's funny.
And I did that for the next 2 hours. And I realized that I sucked at basketball at that moment. It hit me. I was like, wow, I'm terrible. And this guy comes walking out of the woods, what it looked like, but his house was by the woods. Walked out the woods and he goes, hey, my name is Ray. Do you want me to show you how to shoot a basketball? And in my first book, the second chapter is titled Ray, because Ray gave me something that is priceless. He gave me his time. So for the next 2 hours, he showed me how to properly shoot a basketball. And when he left, I was still, you know, terrible at basketball, but I was a little bit better than when before he came. And so he planted the seed in my head that if I work hard at this thing, I can get better. And work ethic was easy for me because I saw my mom do it every single day. So my mom come home from her second job, prepare dinner, and then get ready to go to her third job. So I knew what work ethic looked like. So I just put every ounce of my soul, my being, into basketball. And at first it was to get girls and to, you know, be famous. But then I realized that what if I played professional basketball and my mom never had to work again?
That'd be nice.
And that changed kind of the dynamic of, you know, me being a basketball player. And I had went through all sorts of adversity. I got cut from varsity as a junior in high school. I didn't play my senior year. I played like 30 seconds a game. I'll never forget my coach circled all of us up like one of the big games. I say big game. We were 4-19. We were terrible. But it was like our last game. And I didn't play. And he goes, he's talking about everybody, saying how good everybody was and blah, blah, blah. And he gets to me and he goes, Cornell, you're going to be one heck of a businessman. It's like, what did this dude just say? I'm in myself like, you said something basketball related about every single body. You get to me and say, I want to be a good businessman.
At least it was positive, right?
Yeah, I guess. I was thinking to myself, like, I want to kick this guy in the throat. Like, I was like, is he serious? So I had this big chip on my shoulder that everybody used to tell me that how bad I was. Like, my brother's friends used to pick me up and drive me to the court and beat me up for 2 hours and then just drive me back home and say, okay, we'll get you tomorrow. Like, every day they would tell me how bad I was. And I start to have this doubt, like, can I be a basketball player? And the one thing I tell people all the time is, like, you can't let doubt stop your do. So you can't let anybody's negative words stop your positive actions. So I just kept working at the game of basketball, and I was willing to sacrifice the things that I like to get what I love. And that's another thing where people, you know, they say, you hear people say now, like, oh, I'm about that life, or like, this is, you know, I'm ball is life. You know, there's this whole entire basketball slogan, like, ball is life, like, yeah, basketball is life. And no, it's not, because you're not in the gym.
Is,
well, they say it is. And that's the problem. They say, like, ball is life.
Yeah.
But then you're like, do you work out? No. So it's not really life. It's just, you. It's cool to say.
Okay.
So a lot of people, when it comes to dreams, it's cool to say on Instagram, oh, I'm, you know, living my best life, or I'm doing this and this, but they're not working towards what they actually want.
Yeah.
So you have this fictional world of people working hard when in actuality they're not working, right? So I didn't go to my junior prom. I didn't go to my senior prom. I watched the limousines drive past the court as I was shooting.
Wow.
Like, I was willing to sacrifice.
Wow.
So I get out of high school, and obviously no school's recruiting me because I'm god-awful. And my mom took me to a tryout at Centenary College. And for 2 hours, I was just like a baby deer. Like, I was tripping over myself and, like, falling. And the coach, kindness of his heart, goes, Cornell, you know, you can come to Centenary as a student, and you can even be on the team. You're just probably never going to play.
Hey, honest, right?
He was honest.
Yeah.
And I was like, that sounds amazing. And I looked to my right, and my mom is just, she looks like she's about to kill someone.
Hmm.
And my mom raised her hand. There's three of us in the office. My mom raised her hand. She goes, Coach Gemma, how many players from Centenary College have gone to the NBA? First thing she asked. Not like, what are you guys known for in terms of education or whatever? How many players have gone to the NBA? Because I told my mom that I want to play in the NBA.
Yeah.
So she's like, well, if you want to play there, what are we doing here? And so when we drove back, he looked at my mom and said, none. He looked at me like, this, your son is, like, basically, your son's terrible. Like, are you serious? And so we were driving home. I had this epiphany that my mom believed in me more than I believed in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that really hurt me to the core. Like, I didn't believe in myself, mm-hmm, right? And here this woman is who, coming from her second job, drives me to this tryout. We're driving home, and she's on fumes, and she has all this faith in me. So I decided to change the way I was thinking. So I told my mom, I was like, I'm going to work. I went to Centenary for a year. Never, you know, didn't play. Just kind of hung out. Didn't do great in school. I worked two jobs. Paid myself my way through a junior college, a two-year college. Went to Sussex County College. And by my sophomore year, it finally hit. First team all conference, first team all region, everything.
Nice.
But it took 5 years of being terrible.
Of hard work, though.
Of hard work.
Yeah.
And everybody sees the surface. They don't see what you're doing under the surface. So
yeah.
I always talk about the bamboo tree. It takes 5 years for it to actually grow.
Oh.
Right? So
okay.
Like, people see, they didn't see how much watering that I was doing and seed planting I was doing. And then finally when it happened, everybody was like, what happened to you? Oh my God. I was like, yeah, well, when you were going to parties getting your stomach pumped, I was working on my basketball game.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I got a scholarship to play in North Dakota.
Nice.
And you know, at Minot State University. And I told my mom, I said, Mom, I got a, you know, full scholarship. And she was just like, okay, what do you want for dinner? Like, she wasn't even surprised. She was just like,
I love it.
Of course. Of course you got a scholarship.
Aww.
All you do is work out and play basketball.
Yeah, good for you.
You know, so that was how I got to North Dakota, where I met, you know, my wife, Melissa. She was on the women's basketball team.
Yeah.
I was telling you before the show that She really didn't like me at first.
What's not to like? Come on.
Yeah, well, that's what I say, Nicole. Thank you. But she, I was using my New Jersey sarcasm and humor, and she's from Washington State. And I don't know if they have sarcasm. I don't know if sarcasm hit there yet.
I don't know.
So
not yet. Need some more talk shows.
So it wasn't a like love at first sight thing. I had to make sure that she could play basketball first. So I watched her shoot around a little bit, and then I was like, okay, cool. Like she'll be perfect to have kids with. And that's how that
all about
happened.
The mating. I love it. Well, all right. Well, this has been a great start. Unfortunately, we have to take a quick break, and we will be back with Cornell Thomas.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
And we're back. This is Nicole Smith with Happy to Help. And our Facebook sound is not working today, but if you want to look at us on Facebook, we've got Cornell Thomas here today, and he's more technically advanced than I. So he's on his Facebook page, which is Cornell Thomas, correct?
Yep.
Okay, great. And before we get back to all the his background and how he found basketball and turned that into positivity, I just want to do a quick plug for the Hunterdon County Business Expo and Food Showcase, which is tomorrow. It's the 30th annual. It's from 2 to 7 p.m., with the food showcase being 5 to 7 p.m. It's at Next Level Arena in Flemington. So bring your family, bring your hunger, and come and check out all the vendors and free stuff, free food. Come on down and check it out tomorrow. All right, so back to Cornell. So you met your wife in North Dakota, and then what happened after that?
Yeah, met my wife, came back to New Jersey, started working out with NBA guys that play professionally in Europe, and got a contract to play in Lisbon, Portugal, which I was excited about. Again, my mom did not flinch. She was just like, okay, of course you got a contract. And about a week before I was supposed to go, I was shooting around with some of my friends, and I heard a pop. And so I get on the ground. My friends come over. They come pick me up, and I can't put any weight on my right foot. And so I ended up driving myself, which isn't smart. It's my right foot. Oh. Drive myself to the hospital, drag my foot up to the emergency room at Newton Memorial, and I'm sitting there, and I'm not calling my mom because I feel like if I call her, it makes whatever happened real. So finally, I call my mom. We're like 30 minutes away from the hospital. I think she got there in seven minutes. I don't know who she killed to get there. But she got there, and a guy by the name of Dr. Bradish, an amazing doctor, came up to me, and he goes, Cornell, I'm going to grab the back of your calf muscle. If you feel excruciating pain, we have to do surgery on Thursday. So this is Sunday. I'm leaving the next Sunday. And I'd have to do surgery on Thursday. So he grabbed the back of my calf. Felt excruciating pain. He said, you ruptured your Achilles tendon. And so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I have no recollection of to this day. I have no idea. And then Thursday morning, he wheeled me in for surgery. Thursday afternoon, hard cast from the middle of my thigh to the end of my foot. Thursday night, contract voided. And Friday morning was probably the roughest day of my life because my mom walked in, kissed me on the forehead, and I watched her walk away to one of those three jobs I told her she'd never have to work again. So I was in such, you know, I talk to people about when you have any major change that happens in your life, it mirrors the five stages of, like, when you hear you have a terminal illness, right? So the five stages are, you know, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then acceptance. And to actually change something, you have to accept that there needs to be a change, right? And so when you're in that fourth stage of depression, it's very hard to see the end of the tunnel because all you see is darkness. And that darkness is usually provided by your thoughts, by your mindset. The reason haunted houses are so scary is because your mind plays tricks with you. Now, imagine going through a haunted house with the lights on. You wouldn't be afraid. You just walk around like, okay, there's that corny person there hiding behind that hay, and there's this person here. But as soon as you turn the lights off, your mind starts saying, well, what if that person has a real knife? And what if a... So you start to freak out. So that's what happens when we have to change. So I was sitting there in my room crying, miserable, angry, upset, and I was just like, why is this happening to me? Like, why me? I don't drink. I don't smoke. I'm nice to people, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I just started thinking about my mom, and I started thinking about all the adversity that I saw her go through and how she did it with a, you know, smile on her face most days, and how she would just say, you know, she's not a why me person. She's a what now person. So you could be about the problem or you can be about the solution. Right. And I decided that day to be about the solution. So I called one of my best friends at the time, my friend Kevin, and I said, Kev, I said, pick me up at the gym. We're going to go to the gym on Monday. And Kevin was like, I was in his wedding. We were super tight. And he goes, why am I going to, you know, why do you want me to pick you up? I said, I'm going to go shoot. And he goes, he sounded like I passed away because when you have a very tight inner circle, when something happens to you, it happens to them. Yeah. And Kevin's like a brother still. And so he picked me up on Monday. He drives me to the gym. And for the next 6 months, I shot from a chair.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah. So,
but does that throw off your shot? Like,
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, basketball-wise, it didn't help at all. But mentally,
okay, good.
Just being in that space,
yeah.
It helped take my mind off.
Perfect.
You know, and it was a really good transition from being, oh my gosh, you know, this depressed state to, okay, now what are you going to do? Pick yourself up by the bootstraps, right? So I worked myself back, and then I got an opportunity to coach basketball.
Nice.
Which I didn't want.
Oh,
because I was only 20, I was 26 years old. I did not want to coach basketball. So I'm sitting there, and I see how easily I got that string. Pro here. So I'm sitting there, and my old college coach, junior college coach, is now the AD, athletic director, John Kuntz, Sussex County College. He goes, Cornell, our coach just left like a week before school started. Would you be interested? And I said respectfully, no. Because I put him on this chip on my shoulder because I thought that he was saying that I can't play. Because that's where my mindset was. Yeah. This crazy person. And so then I'm talking to my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, and she goes, babe, I think you'd be a great coach. So I hung up on her. Right? Like I was putting everybody on this chip.
Aww.
And then my mom said, you should go for the interview. I'm not hanging up on my mom.
Yeah.
Right? Because I love to live. So I go on this interview and we sit across from each other and I'm just like not even paying attention. And then when I left the interview, I shook his hand and said, thank you. I left that interview with no intention of coaching basketball. 2 days later, I had an orange whistle around my neck and 15 people calling me coach.
Wow. What made it?
I have no idea.
Yeah, okay.
Something just shifted for me where me and my girlfriend were talking again, and I went out to Seattle to see her. And we were driving back from Dairy Queen, and I wanted to tell her that I was going to take the coaching job, and I couldn't because I had a knot in my throat. And I felt like I was going to start, you know, crying or whatever. And I had all these mixed emotions, and we were driving, and she was just like, hey, what's up? And I said, I think I'm going to take the coaching job. And so whenever you shut the door on something that you've been wanting to do for so long, you think, oh, well, you know, I failed at this. But in actuality, you're just moving on. You're transitioning to something different. Mm-hmm. And so I transitioned to coaching, and all the passion I had for playing basketball, I threw into these young men that were in front of me. And I was a god-awful coach at first because I still thought as a player.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I was there 7 hours a day, 8 hours a day. I couldn't understand why these guys are telling me that they want to play in college weren't doing the same thing I was doing. And I was talking to the great Tina Thomas, my mom, on the phone, and I was complaining about the team. And she goes, baby, can I tell you something? And I said, yeah. She's like, I'm going to give you the same advice I gave you when you were in college. I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, they're not you. She goes, what were your aspirations with basketball? I said, to play professional basketball. She was like, what are their aspirations? I said, touche. Good point. I will shut up now. Thank you, mom. And I started coaching, and I coached for 6 years. And I was like, okay, I want to be a Division I coach. I want to coach a big-time college. I want to beat all these other colleges. And I was like, I want to do it from a small Division I school and beat all the big schools. Yeah. And I ended up going to Blair Academy, where I was an assistant coach under Joe Mantegna, who's a good friend of mine. And he was like, hey, I know what you want to do with basketball. Let's get you there. Because Blair was a big, big step up. Because he coached NBA guys, Division I players. I've talked to literally every single major college coach in the country from being at Blair.
Wow.
And so I would talk to those guys and like talk about what's your culture, what's your team culture, what's your philosophy. And that's what I do for corporations now when I go and I speak.
Nice.
So I was picking their brain without even knowing what I'd be doing later. And so me and Coach, we had a great run for like 7 years. And right before our son Bryce was born, I started to have like this shift that maybe coaching basketball isn't it. And I knew that I wanted to help people. I didn't know how I wanted to do that, what it would look like, but I knew it wasn't just basketball. And I was on Facebook one day, and I was going through my timeline, and it wasn't even during like an election or anything. It was just super negative. And I'm like, wow, man. I said, this is the way people set their day. Like, this is people's morning coffee, is they wake up and they rant on Facebook, or they post, or they get in these crazy heated debates. And I said, okay, I want to change it. So I had a book of positive quotes, and I would put a quote on every day.
Nice.
And people started liking it. And then one day I lost the book, and I wrote my own quote. People still liked it. So I was like, screw the book. I'm just going to write my own quote. And so I just started doing that every day. And then 6 months go by, and a friend of mine goes, Cornell, you should write a blog. I was like, what's a blog? I've never even heard of a blog. And he's like, so we're in Panera, and set it up, and I wrote my first blog. And I started realizing that our words have so much power, right? In the written and the spoken. And what people don't understand is, in the spoken, even when you say something you don't mean, it hits something called our subconscious. It doesn't go away anywhere. That's why every single one of us can tell you a time when they're in fifth grade or fourth grade or third grade where someone said something mean and they never forgot it, right? Because our ego holds on to that and says, well, if I ever see this person again, I'm going to punch them in the throat, right? From like third grade, like someone taking your Twix bar, right? So I said, okay, well, if my words have this type of impact on people, then I want to continue to write, and I want to write a book. And my friend was like, well, how are you going to write a book? I was like, I'm going to ask Google and see what Google says. And Google is definitely a woman, because Google has all the answers, right? Google, I'm sorry, guys.
I love it.
It's just Google is a woman. Mm-hmm. Just write that down somewhere. So I asked Google, and I went on this Create Space site, and I just started writing. And it was called The Power of Positivity, Controlling Where the Ball Bounces. And I wanted to write about people in my life that impacted me. And I think one of the first chapters is a friend of mine, Dan, who passed away. He had stage 4 cancer. And I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I'm a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I've been doing it for 12 years. And up until Dan passed away, the week before, he was on the mats. And he couldn't do everything, right? But he was out there still living his life. And I'll never forget our last time we trained together. And, you know, he was breathing hard, and he said, hey, Cornell, can we take a break? I said, no problem. We would just sit and we would talk. And I was like, wow, what an inspiration. And when I was writing about him, I was just crying the whole entire time. And I started doing the audiobook, and I was with my friend Alex, and I'm talking about him, and I just started crying. Mm-hmm. And there's all this stuff. I was so introverted emotionally growing up because I didn't want my mom to think that she had to worry about me. Mm-hmm. So I always, like, kept everything in. And when I started writing, it was therapeutical for me.
Nice.
Like, I was letting everything out, and I had no idea. Like, in that first book also, there's a chapter called Letter to Bobby. It's a letter to my father that I always wanted to write my dad.
Yeah.
You know? And nice. I'm writing it, and I think I was in, like, Starbucks or something, and I just, tears are flowing down my face. And I'm like, man, this is therapy. My wife was like, I didn't know that about you. There's, like, things she doesn't know that I've written down.
Nice.
So I said, okay, when I talk about positivity, I don't talk about it in a rainbows and butterfly way. And that's why people are so thrown off and kind of, not like it gets a negative connotation, but like people say motivational speakers, and they almost say it kind of in jest, you know, like the Chris Farley, like down by the river, you're sending that like live speech. It's like they think everybody's Richard Simmons, and they're saying, oh, everything's okay. And you know, don't be sad. And that's not positivity. Mm-hmm. You know, that's stupidity. to void out all human emotion. You're going to be upset. You're going to be angry. Mm-hmm. You're going to mourn. There's going to be times you're going to be a little jealous. That's okay. You just can't live in it. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about positivity, that's the way I speak about it. And I just started talking about this subject. And people are like, well, what course did you take? And I took like a life coaching course. And like for 6 months. But that, I mean, there's no governing body, right? Anybody can be a life coach. Anybody can be, I mean, literally anybody. I can take someone off the street and say, okay, you're now a life coach. So it wasn't about that. It's just my life. That was my MBA, was how I grew up. Yeah. You know, my mom was my professor, you know, and life was my professor. So that's what I go out and speak about. So when people say, well, how do I get into what you're doing? I say, well, do you have a passion for it? Yes. Then go do it. Mm-hmm. Period. My mom has always been like, if you want change, be the change. Right. Don't sit on your couch and complain about it.
Oh my God, I say that all the time. Like, get off the couch and volunteer. I say that all the time. I love it. Well, so how did that, how are we doing on time? We're doing great. Okay, so how did that parlay into the Positivity Summit? Did that come, obviously, probably came from that?
Yeah, well, it's funny. So when the first book came out, there's a lady on Twitter. Her name was Evan, and they never wants me to share the story because she was such a great giving story, but I have to because it's so important. And so she was retweeting a lot of my tweets. I was like, oh, that's really cool. So I messaged her. I said, not to be a creep, but can you send me your mailing address? Because I wanted to send her a book, but I didn't want her to know what I was sending.
Okay.
So she sent me her mailing address, and it was in Vietnam.
Wow.
And so it was like, you know, like, four rocks and hieroglyphics, and I was like, I don't know if this book is ever going to get here, but I wrote her a message tonight without saying anything. I just sent her, and a week later she wrote, you know, thank you, author Cornell Thomas, for this beautiful book. Me and my husband Andy love it. We were going through a couple storms, and this helped really help change us. And I at that time Tony Robbins was retweeting some of my quotes, and I was like, oh, that's cool, you know, like, he, you know, he's a busy guy. So me and Evan were talking back and forth one day, and she goes, Tony Robbins does his own Twitter. She's like, it's not his assistant. That's him doing it. So she's like, if he's retweeting your quotes, then you're on his radar somehow. So I was like, okay, cool. So a year goes by. I'm doing a basketball clinic. And Evan goes to me and she goes, Cornell, she goes, can I ask you something? I said, sure. She goes, if I pay for you, me and my husband pay for you to go to this Date with Destiny, would you go for Tony Robbins' event? And I'm like, Evan, I couldn't put you out. Like, there's no way. I know how expensive it is. I can't do that. And she goes, as easy as it was for you to send that book, that's how easy it is for us to send you this.
Aw, that's awesome.
So my daughter Naya was just, she was like 6 months. So I called my mom up first. I said, Mom, if I'm gone for like five nights, will you stay with Melissa? Because I don't want to die. Like, I don't want her to like kill me in my sleep. And my mom said yes. So then I go to my wife and I go, hey, Melissa, this opportunity came up. And I didn't know how she'd respond. And she goes, didn't you write down that you want to meet Tony Robbins? I said, yeah. She goes, you should probably go then.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to go. So I write Evan back. I said, I can go. Nicole, like 30 minutes later, I get a confirmation from the Waldorf Astoria. It's like 6 nights today. It's like $4,000.
Wow. Nice.
All right. My book's $1,150. Right? So then like 15 minutes later, I get a confirmation from Tony Robbins' people. The ticket's $10,000.
I know. That's incredible. Incredible.
And so my $11.50 book comes back, like, you know,
thousandfold.
Who knows, right?
Wow.
And so I go to this event the first day. Actually, I tweet out, looking forward to seeing Tony Robbins. He direct messages me. Cornell, as you know, I retweet a lot of your quotes. I'm looking forward to meeting you. I'm like, what in the world? Like, I was like, what is going on?
That's,
I was like,
cool.
Am I wearing a different cologne? Like, you can't smell it through Twitter. And so, like, the first day, there's 3,000 people in the main pit. There's about 750 people watching him on a screen. And he asks a question. So I just raise my hand. And he just turns, points to me. So I stand up, and we have this, like, 8-minute conversation. I share, like, the first time I ever spoke. And he was laughing, and we were talking back and forth. Because humans don't make me nervous. They just humans do not. My mom does. I don't idolize humans. I don't care about the celebrity stuff. Like, none of that stuff fascinates me at all.
Right.
If you're a good person, I'm fascinated by that. So afterwards, I wrote him and I said, I just want to let you know, I came to the seminar just to see how you are as a speaker. Because competition-wise, in terms of like my mind at that time, I was like, well, if everybody's saying he's the best, I want to see what he does.
Yeah.
So he wrote, and I was like, I would love for you to write the forward to my next book. So he writes me back. He goes, contact my executive assistant.
Nice.
It took a year to get. And my book was published for 7 months. And I waited until I got that endorsement. Nice. And then I published my book.
Nice.
So if it wasn't for me giving this book to Evan, just because I wanted her to have it, and her having the kind of heart that she has to send me to this event, then that endorsement never happens. Right?
Yeah.
And so the best giving story that's even better than that is my mom, again. We're coming back from church. It's me, my mom, my sister Alicia. My sister Alicia's 2 years younger than me. Alicia's the princess. I'm the youngest boy. And then she came along and, you know, trumped all that. And so we're driving back, and my sister's asking for whatever she wants from the store. We had no money. We didn't have the money. So my mom looks at her, and she goes, Alicia, we don't have the money. And just left it like that. So my mom says that it's one and done. She says, we don't have any money. It's like, okay, now if you love your life, just be quiet. My sister keeps going on. I'm like, Mom, Mom, please, please, please. So the day prior, I got $20 in my pocket because I went to buy a laser tag gun. It's 1999. So I worked for some of the brothers at the church like all day. Me and my brother were like putting things into a dumpster, and we got $20. So this was burning in my pocket. My mom said she was going to take me that Monday. So it's a Sunday. My sister was going on so much. I just took the $20 in my pocket. And I said, here, Alicia, and just gave it to her. Mm-hmm. And my mom looks at me, and I'm pissed. I'm like, I can't believe I just did that. Like, what's wrong with me? And she said, Alicia, what are you saying? Alicia said, thank you, thank you, thank you. So we went to the store and got her thing. And then a week goes by. I'm sitting in my room. My mom walks in my room, and she puts $40 on the dresser, which we didn't have. So I give her $20. I said, Mom, I only gave Alicia $20. And she goes, when you give, you get back double. Oh, she kissed me on the forehead and walked out.
Wow.
So I never, ever, ever forgot that lesson. Like, when you give, you get back exponentially. And not just giving, when you give without expectation. And that's what you promote, and this is what you do, and that's the beauty of, you know, what you're doing with the show is just give. It doesn't have to be you're getting something back, right? God, universe, whatever you believe in, you'll get payback, right? Just the feeling of giving is the payback. So I started the Positivity Summit while I was at the Tony Robbins event. I was looking around. I said, this is an amazing event, phenomenal energy. But I said, the ticket price is going to exclude 99.9% of the population. So I said, what if I did an event where it's not just me speaking? I don't want to make it the Cornell Thomas event. What if I made an event where there are a bunch of different speakers? Men, women, black, white, Muslim, Christian, doesn't matter what your background was. And then one of the days, we had a pay it forward. So we did a give back. And I'm like, that would be a really cool event. So we all have partners at the Date with Destiny. And my partner, Carrie, was looking at me. She goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm just writing down my purpose project. She goes, you've been writing for 2 hours. I had no idea what was going on. Because when you're in your purpose.
You're in the zone, right?
Yeah, you're in the zone. Like, you don't, time was not even, it was non-existent. And so I said, okay, well, I want to run a positivity summit. It's all over the world. And I ran the first one in New Jersey, Alamuchi, New Jersey. I have a good friend of mine, Dan Cavanaugh, who said, Cornell, there's a little mansion, and I know the person. I can get you in there for really cheap. You should look at it. So I went there, shook hands, got it for super cheap. We had 35 people.
Nice.
It was a beautiful, beautiful event. Then I did one in New York. Then I just did one in Los Angeles.
Nice.
And I don't have a team yet. But I have people that are just helping out as much as they can. And we have, like, literally, we had two sponsors. We have my friend Dan, who has his own law firm. He's like, hey, Cornell, hey, I can give you a little bit. And we have a friend of mine. They have a company called King & Perry, who just sponsored us for this last one, where they're like, Cornell, let us help. So now people are starting to see what's going on.
Build the momentum.
And the momentum's starting to come. I just got a sponsorship yesterday from my friend Jay LaGuardia. And, like, people are just saying, okay, well, how do we help? And I'm like, man, you can help me and help me be able to go to sleep and not have to sleep with one eye open by just sponsors.
Nice.
Right? So we're making it bigger and bigger and bigger. And our next one is going to be in Toronto in April.
Very
April
cool.
27th, 28th. So I'm just not stopping, you know, because we're not guaranteed any time here on this earth. Every day we wake up, we're on borrowed time. So my whole thing is, what can I do while I'm here to help make an impact long after I'm gone?
Yeah. But aren't you having a blast, too?
I love it.
I know, right?
I love it. But in it, like, people are like, how do you have energy to do this? How do you have energy? I was like, you're in your purpose.
That's right.
You're in your purpose. That's have energy. Purpose is an amazing fuel for people. The people that are miserable, like, and upset all day long, it's usually they're doing things that they don't want to do, and they're upset all the time. And, well, man, I'm not saying leave your job. You don't have to Jerry Maguire it. But find your exit strategy.
I know. Well, and that's why people always say to me, how do you have so much energy? I'm like, because I'm doing so many fun things and I love it. And it infuses you with energy. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it doesn't fall in your lap. You have to kind of explore things, take risks, figure it out. And then it'll hit you eventually. Like a lightning bolt, right?
Take risks.
Yes.
What you just said. sometimes you have to take risks, and sometimes you're going to have ramen noodle nights, right? Where you're not going to have steak, and you're not going to have, and it's going to be a struggle. And if you're an entrepreneur, especially if you're a social entrepreneur or you're a philanthropist, man, there's going to be times where you're just like, I got to pay rent, and I got to do this, and I have kids, and I have to, but man, if you just stay the course and just keep fighting, good things are going to happen. It's not, that's not hokey to say. That's anything that you want to be in life. Someone is doing it for millions of dollars right now.
Yep.
The blueprint's out there.
Yep. And you just got to believe. Like, if it's a fine line between fear and risk and but if you just believe at its most basic sense, right?
But that's the bridge, right? So the bridge between where you're at and where you want to go is belief, right? That's the bridge. If you can just believe, and in that belief comes the hard work, and in that belief becomes the determination, in that belief comes faith, and in that belief comes collaborating with people that are doing amazing things and love and all these other things. But in that belief, that is the bridge, right? Yeah. Where you want to go, where you are, and where you want to go. You have to have that belief and faith, right? And it's like the wind. You don't always see it. You feel it. You have this feeling, Nicole, that what you're doing is the right path. I have this feeling that what I'm doing is the right path. And it's not always rewarded in financial, right? It's not always rewarded by you make this amount of money. It's rewarded in how I feel right now doing the radio show. I just feel good. I feel great. Like when I drive home, I'm like, I feel excited because I'm with someone that gets it, right? Like, so it's not always in that. Sometimes the reward is just in a hug. It's in someone saying, hey, Nicole, your show today, it really inspired me. It really changed my mindset. That's where it is, right? And it's like I get goosebumps talking about it because it's such a beautiful thing. So I think if people just understood that and realized that not everybody's going to change the world, but if you just do your part in being kind and helping one another and loving one another and not using all the divisive ways that people, the world uses to divide us,
right,
and being one, the world would be a better place.
Absolutely. And I always say one person can't do everything, but we can all do something.
I love it.
Right? Like that's a basic one. Yeah.
For sure. That's great.
All right. Well, let's take, we want to hear more about positivity and a couple other things, but let's take one more quick break and we'll be back.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And this is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help. If you want to check us out on Facebook, you need to go to Cornell Thomas on Facebook, and he's got it playing live on his site there, so his page. So we're very welcome. We're very happy to have Cornell Thomas, and we've had all this enlightening, positive conversation. And now we're going to talk about he just returned from Dubai doing his positive work there. So kind of tell us how that came to be.
Yeah, so I have a friend, Omar Abbasedi. He is a big speaker in Dubai. And I was introduced to him through another person. And that's how it works, right? We're all connected. And I was in Los Angeles, and my friend was Airbnb-ing his place. So I met someone that knew him and was like, you guys have to meet. And so I contacted him. We started talking. And this was like early September. And I was like, Omar, I'm going to be in Dubai soon. I just said it. And he goes, oh, that'd be great. That'd be great. And then there's a lady, Zareen, who followed Omar and then started following me. And we started talking. And she's like, we're doing an event. You know, would you come out and speak? And I was like, yeah, I will for sure come out and speak in Dubai. So the only problem was I was doing the Positivity Summit in Los Angeles. And then I got back Monday morning. And then I left Wednesday morning, early morning for Dubai. Actually, I got back Monday at like midnight. So I only had a day and a half home. And so I landed, took that 13-hour flight, landed in Dubai, and I had an hour before my first speech. Mm-hmm. I spoke at the American University in Dubai. A friend of mine, Raj Kapoor, set that up. So I was speaking in Dubai, and they're like, again, how are you doing this? How are you awake? And I'm like, I'm in Dubai right now speaking. Some dude from New Jersey speaking in Dubai. I was like, I think I can make it happen. So the conference was called Recon. It's a big real estate, retail conference. And I did a team workshop, and I also did a keynote. And then I was on a radio show out there in Sharjah, 95 Pulse, and then I did a couple other small interviews, and I was there for like 5 nights. It was a whirlwind, and it was just so different culturally, obviously, seeing in America when I go and speak and I'm doing my talk, people are like laughing and jumping around. And in the Middle East, they carry themselves very seriously. So after my speech, they came up and like, we loved it. But while you're doing the speech, you're like, do they love it or do they not like it at all? So Dubai is 80% expat. There's people from all over the place. I mean, I heard 30 different dialects. So the people that were from different countries, they were like laughing. And the Middle Easterns, they were, you know, sitting up straight and very serious. But afterwards, they were great. And I just don't, it's not about me. So I don't really care about stuff like that. Like, I've been in some crazy environments. I'm just like, this is just going to be a learning process. So while I was there, there's a guy named Gautam who he's the CEO of this speakers bureau called Right Selection. And he watched me the first day and he goes, can I talk to you tonight? And I said, sure. And he goes, we'd like to offer you a contract to speak in the Middle East, you know, for the next 2 years, I think 12 times or so. And so I was like, oh, let me look over the contract. So, which means me and my wife. So I said, Melissa, check this out. And then I signed the contract. So I signed with him, and which was great. And, you know, I told Zareen, who set up the event, I said, I'm going to do a 2020. I'm going to do a Positivity Summit in Dubai. And I was like, we're going to have Toronto. Then we have England in September. And I was like, and then we're going to go into Dubai. Then we'll come back to the States. And so, again, it's right now it's me, right? My wife does the website. And let's roll. You know, so she's like, when you do the event in Dubai, she's like, I'll set up everything here. So she's already planted that seed in her head. So I just want to do this all over the world. I don't want to do this in an isolated space. I don't want to do this just in our country. This message is needed everywhere. And I think I was put on this earth. I was created to be one of the light spreaders to go out and share it just like yourself everywhere else.
I love it. It's amazing. You're doing amazing things.
Thank you.
Well, and I know you post your little cute little kiddos on your Facebook too. Yeah. And I always talk about when I was growing up, volunteering was part of our family value system. And so I didn't realize it later I'd be all in this deep, which I love. But I think it starts at home and it starts early. So how do your kids react to all this positivity stuff?
Yeah. It's funny because kids are sponges, right? They can anything you teach them right now, my son is 5, my daughter's 3, they can pick up anything. If I want to teach them Japanese, if I want to teach them, I don't think their brains are fully like formed, developed until like 7 or 8. Like you can feed them anything. And I was sitting there, and I was just talking to my friend Dan today on the way here, and I said, Bryce looked at me a couple months ago, and he goes, Daddy, he goes, the man that knows everything knows nothing. And I looked at him like he got possessed or something. And I'm like, is Emily Rose in my house? Like, what did he just say? And I said, B, what did you just say? He goes, the man that knows everything knows nothing. I said, where did you learn that? And he just started laughing. And I was like, oh, wow. This kid's been on my lap doing 60 Seconds of Sanity since he was 6 months old. I was like, my daughter, since she was born, she's been in the background. So I was like, just through osmosis, these kids are going to pick up whatever we put out. There are no bad kids. There's lots of bad parents. There's no bad kids. Whatever you teach your kids, they'll learn. So if you want to teach your kids ignorance, if you want to be an idiot around your kids, then you're going to have idiot kids, right? Period. If you want to teach, you can teach your kids whatever. You know, I teach my kids to judge, like my mom taught me, don't judge the carton, judge the egg. And that's like in anything. That's religion, that's race, that's anything. And so I don't judge the carton. It doesn't matter what I see on TV, what I hear. I judge who you are as a person. And that's what one of the big things I'm going to teach my kids. And my daughter Naya and Bryce are so different. But Naya is a crazy person, which I love because she's a girl. I love the fact that she's a crazy person. She looks at, she had, like, my wife sent me a picture. I was in Dubai. She sent me a picture. My daughter has her shirt off with boxing gloves. And she's making this, like, face, like, and I'm like, this is my little lioness. I was like, this is great. So I always say my number one job is my kids. That's the most important job that I have. It's the job I take the most seriously, is the fact that God allowed me and my wife to have kids, to have children. And so every day I wake up, I'm just, even when my Naya comes in the room at 5 o'clock in the morning and jumps on the bed, I'm always thankful.
Yeah. And so tell us about what is 60 Seconds of Sanity? How often do you do it, or do you do it when it strikes you, or what's that?
Well, we were doing it every day. Like, me and Bryce were doing it. I mean, we were getting it every day. Then Naya was born. And that changed drastically. So then we were doing like 3 times a week, 4 times a week. And then they got older. And then, like, getting them on camera. Like, I'd have to, like, sneak them on my car or whatever. And so now we have, like, the other day was the first time in a little while. So now my goal is to do it, like, if I can do it 4 times a month, if I can do it once a week and have the kids come on, then that'd be great. And sometimes it'd be, like, 2 times, 3 times a week. Sometimes I might not do it for 2 weeks. So it's just funny having them on because they're the show, right? People are like, yeah, the quote was cool, but we just want to see your kids. not even you. Like, could you exit out the camera and just let me see your kids? So it's beautiful, the fact that I can share it with them.
So do you just let them go? Do you let them kind of say whatever? And that's
whatever
the
they say. Okay. Nothing is scripted. Right. It's the quote that I do a quote every morning.
Right. Okay.
I make up a quote. So I read the quote, and then I do like kind of my thoughts on the quote. And then whatever happens, happens. Right. Like, sometimes, like, Bryce might mimic me the whole entire time, or sometimes Naya just hits the camera on my hand. Like, sometimes a dog comes in. Like, even when I do my Facebook Lives, all that stuff, I don't script anything. Yeah. I just speak.
Yeah.
You know, I want it to be real. So I'm not like, okay, let me get my notes together. I mean, there might be a central theme, but that's it.
Yeah. And you mentioned before you've gone through depression when you had your injury and different things. So what about someone who's sitting on the couch and they're listening and they need to get off the couch, or they need a shift? You mentioned that several times. I love that. You got just a shift, any kind of shift. So what would your advice be to someone to get them motivated or shift, get them to shift?
Yeah. The first thing I deal with these type of phone calls and text messages every day. The first thing I say is get up. Nothing happens from your couch. Nothing. So the first thing you do, if you're not feeling motivated, if you're not feeling inspired, you're not feeling whatever, and you're home, get up and get out of your house. Get in your car. Drive. Walk down the street. Inspiration is everywhere. I remember being on a basketball court, and there's a crack in the middle of the court. And from that crack, there's a little plant that was growing. And that was my inspiration for the day. Now, I never would have saw that if I was on my couch wallowing in whatever I'm wallowing in. So that's the movement, right? Nothing happens when you're stagnant. Move. Get up. That's the first thing you can do. And everybody, if you're physically able to do that, right, everybody can do that. So if you're physically able, then get up and do it. Now, if you're not physically able, right, then mentally you have to get up. That means get on YouTube, and instead of watching nonsense, right? Put in Les Brown or put in like Tony Robbins or motivational video or inspirational story or Cornell Thomas. I have tons of videos up there. Anything. Put something in there where you can look at it and say, okay, well, this is shifting the way I'm thinking a little bit. But if you're just going to sit there and be a vegetable and do nothing and expect results, you're not going to get them.
Right. And I used to listen to Brian Tracy tapes. Do you know who he is? Yeah. He was, years ago, but he was always saying, your mind will grow weeds if you don't do anything like a garden. So it's you have to weed it and you have to fill it with flowers and positive things. So
that's, I love that.
I love that. So if you just, like you said, get weed your mind and fill it with good things.
It's a muscle.
Yeah.
It's a muscle. It can get dormant really quick. Your strongest muscle is your mind. Your mind controls everything. It controls your faith. It controls love. It controls everything, right? So you can convince yourself of anything. So that's why you have to work your mind so much.
Right. And so tell everybody how they can find you on social media, Facebook, Twitter. Give everybody all the handles.
Sure. So Instagram is at CornellThomas34. Twitter and Facebook is just Cornell Thomas. I think I have room for 400 more friends on Facebook. So if you can
bring it.
If not, then you can just kind of track what I'm doing. Our website is cornell-thomas.com. Don't go on it till tonight because we're working on it. There's a bug in it. And everything else, I'm very accessible. I do one-on-one mindset coaching. I do group coaching. I do a bunch of stuff. So
Corporate coaching.
Yeah, that's
easy
fine
for me to say.
Yeah, that's fine. Corporate coaching too. I do that too. Corporate culture. Now you have me doing it. Culture coaching, everything. So just message me. I'm very, like, you know how you go on people's pages, they say they respond within 30 minutes or 45 days. Mine is like 1 second.
No way.
Like if you message me, I will respond right away. Okay. Because I think that there's beauty in this. We met the one time and look where we are.
I know. Yeah. So yeah, reach out, get off your couch, pick up your phone and start typing and looking at the videos or check out his Twitter feed or Facebook, anything like that. You can just check it out. And what was your quote today? Did you have one today? We got a bunch here. But
the crazy thing is every time I write them, I forget them.
Oh, no, it's okay.
So I never remember my morning quote.
Yeah, no, that's all right, though. But, well, people can go look on Facebook, but I got so many. I think my favorite so far from today is you can't let doubt stop your do.
Ooh, yeah,
I think
that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. So thank you so much, Cornell Thomas, thank you. I'm sure we'll see you soon.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes. President Trump preparing to hold a post-election news conference. It's set for 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. That as the president is threatening to retaliate against Democratic efforts to investigate his administration after Dems gain control of the U.S. House, though not gaining control of the U.S. Senate. Trump tweeting, quote, "If the Democrats think they're going to waste taxpayer money investigating us, then we will likewise be forced to consider investigating them." His advisor, Kellyanne Conway, says,
"I think what we're about to see is a tale of two Democratic parties here on Capitol Hill behind me. On the one hand, we want to work, we want to unify, we want to engage with the White House. And on the other hand, subpoenas and investigations."
She was speaking on the Fox News Channel. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
This is a national health alert from the Healthcare Hotline. Are you on Medicare and or have private insurance and suffer from back pain? MD Topical has a solution for you. Today, you can qualify to receive a pain-relieving treatment, such as a comfortable back brace or a customized pain treatment at little or no cost. Call MD Topical toll-free now, 877-875-5909. It just takes a couple of minutes to qualify for these amazing treatments that have helped thousands of people with severe pain. Your personalized pain treatment will be delivered directly to your door. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com and get started on your road to a pain-free life. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com.
While Democrats are celebrating a lot of victories yesterday that gave them control of the U.S. House once again, they are not celebrating the defeat of some of their, quote, rising stars, like Democrat Andrew Gillum, who lost to Republican Ron DeSantis in the Florida governor's race, and in Texas, Beto O'Rourke, that congressman losing to incumbent Republican Senator Ted Cruz. Also in Florida, a U.S. Senate race appears to be heading towards a recount as Democratic incumbent Senator Bill Nelson is not conceding in his race against former Florida Governor Rick Scott, who holds less than a 40,000 vote lead as of now. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's meeting that was scheduled this week with the top North Korean officials been canceled at the last minute. It was supposed to take place tomorrow in New York. The State Department says it's going to be held at a later date. This is USA Radio.